about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 15th on the West Coast, now September the 16th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network as well around the world, and boy, I got to tell you, got a really positive response on last night's show, and we're going to continue along the same lines. I'm going to be talking about a few cases that have been out there over the years. Some of you may be very familiar with these. For some of you, it'll be the first time you ever heard some of the stories I'm going to tell. Now, we must use discernment when we listen to these stories. And consider that it's just as easy to put out a very believable, exciting, movie script-like story to get people to buy into fear or to buy into disinformation, and et cetera, we'll say. The reason I add that little caveat there is because I'm not trying to convince everybody that I know all the truth, but I'm quite aware of a lot of what's going on, as many of you are in your own ways, either through your own research, your own experience, the situations that come your way in terms of information with the people that you network with, and just a general interest in some of the topics that we're talking about. I prefaced my remarks this week on this topic as being taboo, and I've said that before. These stories, the research, the revealing of the truth is considered taboo when you strike a sensitive nerve in those that don't want this information out there, and all I say is it's only information. What's the big deal? What's the big deal about people waking up and making a determination that they're not going to be enslaved by a government, by another country, by invaders of the country, by corporate interests, or by organized crime, or by aliens from another planet? What is wrong with not wanting that to happen and informing others of certain realities? Yes, they're difficult to swallow, I know. They're difficult to grasp or wrap your mind around because you've been taught through movies, through television, through propaganda, through the indoctrination system. Oh, excuse me. They call it education. That these things aren't possible. Yet at the same time, they tell you they're looking to find these possibilities. Well, that's just a lie that they tell you while they spend trillions and trillions of dollars that they steal from us, that they steal from the things that we vote for, whether the count is accurate or not, that they steal from you by throwing you into the courts, by setting you up for crimes that you didn't commit, or by outright murdering you. And they play this monopoly game with money. All this is, folks, is a big illusion. And yet we make it so real because we become so emotional over it. Yes, there are a lot of things to get emotional about, but I'll tell you, in the end, the things that you're going to feel the most at the end of your life are the relationships you had in your life and the mark that you left on mankind. What you contributed to mankind, that is ultimately what you're going to face at the end of your life. And so everything that is being shoved in your face right now is just to divert your attention away from the truth. because you could be realizing all of those things right now. You don't have to wait till the end of your life to see that you may have screwed it up or that you did an excellent job, and you can accomplish more. You can do it just for the love of doing it, as opposed to feeling like you have to do it to survive. That's what a repressive, destructive, corrupt system causes you to do. And an illusory system at that. It's based on illusion. That means what you see, what you hear, what you're feeling, and what you're thinking is not real. It's only a forced, predictable outcome through the indoctrination and the propaganda that we're all fed, that we're just supposed to accept things the way they're told to us. That's our duty. Is it the duty of the universe to allow corruption to exist just because corruption wants to exist? Well, God, as the creator of the universe, says it's a free will universe. But that doesn't mean that the free will of some overrules the free will of everyone else. That's one of the most fundamental principles of life in the universe. Because someone wants to be corrupt and wants to steal what you have or murder you through all kinds of systems that they've designed to make money in the process of killing you, doesn't mean that you have to accept that as a reality. And when we talk about UFOs or flying saucers or craft from other worlds, flying ships, discs, whatever you want to call them, UFO is not even the appropriate word anymore, because we know what they are. We know who has them, we know where they come from, and we know who's building them here. In this country and around the world, we've all seen them. Save the ones that are watching TV, got their six-pack of beer and hot dog, like my friend Drew Raines likes to say. Their seven-course meal, he calls it. There's nothing wrong with having a beer, and there's nothing wrong with eating a hot dog if you're paying attention to other things going on in the world, in the universe. And there are people that pay attention all the time to what's going on in the universe, and they see a lot of stuff that's going on. And like on this show, they like to share it with you. They feel an obligation to share it with you because they don't see people reacting to what's going on. They see everyone in this sort of sleepwalking stupor. Like the movie, The Night of the Living Dead. Only it's the day and night of the living dead. Most people feel that there's really no meaningful purpose behind life because they've totally bought the lie that's been forced down our throats. It doesn't change what's going on in the universe and the rest of the universe, though, whether you see it or not. You know, we have this question we're asked in school. If there's no one in the woods and a tree falls, is there a sound? And I've heard scientists say, well, of course there's no sound because there wouldn't be anyone to hear it. But if you had a tape recorder there and there was no one there and the tape recorder was running, would the tape recorder not record the sound? Or if you could see it from another dimension, would there be a sound? What about the animals that are there? I mean, what do the animals mean to these scientists when they say people are as dumb as sheep or cattle? So if you think outside the box, of course there's a sound. The falling of the tree makes sound waves. Now, whether the sound waves reach anyone is a different story, but a sound is going to be accompanied by sound waves. Sound waves are going to produce a sound. You mean because a person's not there, all of a sudden the tree falling is a silent act? That it doesn't act the same way? that the same phenomena don't occur? So whether you have seen a UFO or not doesn't mean that there are or there aren't UFOs. And notice I use both. Until you have seen one, you have not actually experienced it to where you can definitively say, I've seen this or I've seen that. If it's out of the realm of your experience, you'll just discount it. But that's like saying, you know, there's a lot of evil in the world, and because you have seen nothing but evil, that there is no good in the world. There is good in the world. You have to look for it. And believe me, when I see it, I'm going to bring it on this show. I've done that a lot, but I also talk about the evil because we have to pay attention to the fact that it's there. And like a fish lure to a hungry fish, a hook with a big fat earthworm on it, a night crawler, or some bait fish, we just accept these things. We bite the bait without really discerning why it's being presented to us. Why do I share these things with you? Because I've looked at lots of evidence, and I've had my own experiences, and when I combine the evidence that I've seen that matches my experiences, I can say definitively that so-and-so is telling the truth, and the government is covering this up, or some agency in the government, some super top-secret agency. Why does it have to be top-secret? Oh, because it will scare the people, but they make horror pictures to scare you. You see, we don't equate all sides of the situation. We look just at what's right in front of our nose, and we don't really see what it represents and how we feel about it, how we think about it. The fact that your thoughts about it, your opinions about it, your feelings about it, and how it affects everything else you are is totally contingent upon what you understand. People fear things they don't understand, so they keep making horror movies. They've got a new movie out called Devil. As if there isn't enough violence, enough evil in the world, they have to make another movie with a devil? The topic of a devil? Just called Devil. I have no intention of seeing it. I can pick up the newspaper and read about what's going on in Washington, or I can turn on the TV and watch CNN, and I can see devil in action every day, 24/7. These people are the breaking story, such and such a cosmetic company coming out with new makeup. Breaking news. My God. Where are people's consciousness? And they do this to brainwash you. Breaking news, breaking story. They show the same garbage over and over and over, just like an infomercial. And people just lap it up like they're out in the desert. And anything, if they say, well, you know, this is the news, but, you know, if you're thirsty, drink it. It'll quench your thirst. You know, I'm speaking metaphorically, but the point I'm making is that we have become so dependent upon someone else telling us what's going on that we can't see it for ourselves as a whole, as a group of people. And there's a lot of evil going on in the world right now. There's a lot of people dying senselessly for lots of reasons. And it doesn't have to happen. It's not necessary for that to happen, despite what they say. Now, I may rant a little bit more as the show goes on, but I do want to play some clips, and I want to share some cases with you. Many of you probably have heard of Bob Lazar. was a physics student at MIT and it was another college, I think it was Caltech. He had studied advanced physics, and somehow he landed a job with Area 51, and then later on he was transferred to S4. Those are the bases in about 125 miles or so northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada. Many of you have seen the photos of that. They denied that this base existed for years. When I and many people I know lived in California, we used to hear the sonic booms constantly. They were flying all kinds of experimental craft over, really all over the state of California. This was going on. For years, it went on. And they denied that the base existed. Then it was learned the Russians found out about it. Then there was a joint project with the Russians. They lie and they lie and they lie and they lie about the existence of this base. But there were all kinds of exotic craft that had been either captured or built. Now, there are many stories leading up to the fact that the captured craft could end up there. And then they would try to back engineer these systems to discover anti-gravity. They've had anti-gravity for a long time, folks. Don't be fooled by the recent stories coming out. It's been there a long time. And then they're telling us how we, you know, we have to beat the Russians to the moon, and we were on Mars. Everybody was up there on Mars before we even went to the moon. A lot of people are saying, oh, I just can't believe that, you know, because I saw Walter Cronkite tell us in those days, and many were too young to even remember those times. But we saw that in late July of 1969. We saw the films that they were broadcasting over TV. Now, many scientists said at that time that was impossible because we had not discovered a way to move through the Van Allen Belt, which is a region of great radioactivity that would have fried anybody in a space capsule. Didn't have the technology. We didn't have the means to do it properly. But the way they got to Mars was different from how they went to the moon. They didn't have the same issue. Now, Bob Lazar was back engineering some of these propulsion systems. And he was exposed to anti-gravity and antimatter. And he was debunked, we'll say. He came out on a lot of radio shows a number of years ago. And they tried to debunk him. They destroyed his records. But someone was able to call up and get a W-2 from his employer. And he at the time, he was employed by Naval Intelligence. He even said, I don't understand why Naval Intelligence is handling all of these issues of flying saucers and exotic spacecraft. Well, that's a long story, and that's something that we can certainly talk about at another time. But he was able to produce proof that he worked there. And then the investigation went deeper, and they found him in a company phone book. He was listed there, and his extension number and his position. Didn't think of himself as being anything special, and in fact, he thought he was quite fortunate to see all this. Many, many stories came out trying to debunk whether there was even a guy named Bob Lazar. It's always been the same person that's come forth saying he's Robert Lazar. And in this clip I'm going to play for you, he talks a little bit about some of these realities. Rather than listen to me, I'd like you to listen to Bob Lazar.
Have you maintained any contacts with your colleagues out at S4?
No, I never heard from anyone other than for a very brief time after I left. Dennis, who was my supervisor, did try and make contact with me at the meeting place was the Union Plaza Hotel, and I took a friend of mine, Gene Huff, down there. and another friend, a former colleague and scientist from Los Alamos. And we did, we saw him, but I also did recognize some security personnel walking around there from S4. So whether or not it was a setup or what was going on or he was trying to talk to me, we never found out and we left. It just was a real strange situation. I never heard from him since.
As we enter the 21st century, how has your experience changed your beliefs?
Well, if you want to word the question, how are my opinions changed? I would say considerably. Before I was at S4, I was more or less one of the guys that thought, you know, all these government conspiracy and UFO buffs and things like that were complete lunatics. I even remember before I was involved there, a friend showed me a little newspaper clipping and said John Lear was giving a lecture who was touting that aliens from another world came to Earth and there's 70 different species. And I remember laughing on the phone that this guy had lost his mind. And I was also under the impression that, you know, boy, the government's all for the people and they, you know, they're out here to protect us and all that. And, you know, after the experiences I had there, everything is completely turned around. You know, the government is doing everything but looking out for us. I mean, the only thing they're looking out is for themselves. You know, obviously the ET craft do exist. Something had to build them, so there must be aliens. And since there are and the craft are there, there must be some sort of factory and an entire civilization somewhere. And if in fact that is true, and it apparently is, then there must be others. Actual crafts and technology from another world. And that's probably the most important event in history. It kind of moved from science fiction into reality in my mind. And it really just, I guess, opened my eyes. The big thing is whether or not we can duplicate them. If we can understand what a device is or how something operates or what its physical makeup is, that's great. But if we can't duplicate it, it's useless to us. So there's really two phases to the project going on there. It's understanding what we're looking at. And then once we understand it, is can we duplicate it with earthly materials and earthly technology? And, you know, unless we've got a handle on both of them, all that technology is useless to us. And if it turns out we can't do that, all we have is one single prized possession that we have to take care of, and that's it.
After all that's been said and done, would you do this over again? What would you do differently?
I would probably have played along for a longer time. I would like to have known a little bit more about the technology and probably kept quiet if I could have. And possibly never have said anything. I almost wish I had done that. You know, it's really only caused headaches and problems. But I believe if I was given the opportunity again to go back in time and redo it, I think I pretty much would have just shut up and gone along with the program. I would have much preferred that instead of the Navy or whoever it was, that handpicked a few renegade scientists here and there, that they turn it over to some more qualified people. Obviously, I was not the most qualified person on propulsion or field propulsion or anything of that sort. I was just some guy. I mean, I could have named 10 or 12 other guys that were more qualified than me. But, you know, if they turned it over to the scientific community and not just a couple guys here in the United States, I mean, you need a large group of people in a large lab to research what's going on there, not a little quiet installation. It's the security itself that prevents them from getting anywhere. I mean, they never do work hand in hand. You can't have a military mind. Science itself must communicate. You have to have a free exchange of ideas. That's how things progress. And when you clamp down on a security system like that, where you work in isolated groups and ideas cannot be exchanged, you don't get anywhere, and that's the problem they have.
What does the future hold for Bob Lazar?
Well, I'm not really involved in any of that stuff anymore. That's kind of put behind me. I have my own businesses that I work at, some computer graphics, some consultation, other technical jobs, radiation detectors, and a few other things like that. So really, I just go about my life, and that's, you know, something that happened that was fantastic, and it's over, but it's kind of hard to shake it loose. But eventually I will, and that'll be that. I think all the surveillance and everything stopped. I don't think anyone's bothering to monitor me. I've said everything that I know. It's been all over the place, so it's kind of a done deal. As far as whether or not there are any craft out there, I believe, you know, they were out and gone in probably the late 89, early 90. And the only thing people see now out there are, you know, either flares or planes coming into land. But that's about it.
Did you have an interest in flying saucers or science fiction in general as a child?
I was never interested in flying saucers as a child. Science fiction, you know, I watched Star Trek, I guess, with everyone else back then. But for the most part, yeah, I didn't even believe in flying saucers up until I was employed at S4.
I couldn't help at one point in my discussions with privately with General Secretary Gorbachev, when you stop to think that we're all God's children, wherever we may live in the world, I couldn't help but say to him, just think how easy his task and mine might be in these meetings that we held if suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet outside in the universe. We'd forget all the little local differences that we have between our countries, and we would find out once and for all that we really are all human beings here on this earth together. Well, I don't suppose we can wait for some alien race to come down and threaten us, but I think that between us, we can bring about that realization. Thank you all. God bless you all.
Of course, that was former U.S. President Ronald Reagan speaking there at the end of that clip. And there you heard some of what Bob Lazar had to say. Of course, he goes into much more detail. The length of the show doesn't really do what he has to say much justice in that regard, because we do want to learn as much about this as we can. But just the remarks, the simple, plain, everyday type of remarks that Bob Lazar made shows you, if you have any intuition at all working for you, you can sense that he's telling the truth. He's telling the truth. And his story interfaces with many other stories of a different nature. Now, if people are being abducted, does it really matter if they're being abducted by people from other planets or from our government? Really, is there any difference at this stage of the game? If they're lying to us about the existence of these places, and we know they exist, my God, they have, for years, they've been taking pictures in Mexico City, video, of craft coming from all over the place. Now, it doesn't matter if it's alien or owned by governments, they're there. And they deny this, like they deny chemtrails and every other thing they deny. Now, when you approach it with that thought in mind, then it becomes, there's a pathway to your consciousness that opens up, and you can take in more information. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to assume that the information is truthful. They can create all these stories. They can make up names. They do this with the banks and the real estate. They make up names, and they steal the money using those names. They don't even have to go into identity theft. They just create fictitious figures. But these things that we're talking about last night and tonight on this show have everything to do with the experiences of people. There was a man who lived in the region of southern Ohio and northern Kentucky. Kenny Black, I think was his name, if I remember correctly. Kenny, anyway. Kenny was a MUFON type of researcher, the Mutual UFO Network. And he had investigated a number of cases, was going around interviewing some people. I myself interviewed some people who suddenly didn't want to talk anymore. And I see the fear that people have about talking about these things. So, you know, it's not that I'm trying to create fear and to learn about these cases, but if somebody tells me that they've gone and investigated a case and they have problems with the case, but they don't want to talk about it. In other words, they have problems as to whether or not the case is real. To me, it puts up a red flag. There's a problem there. Is it that they've been threatened? Or is it that they've seen something so beyond their understanding of reality that they just can't cope with it? I don't think most people go through that. If you can sit through a Star Trek movie or a Superman movie or some kind of horror picture and come out unscathed out of the theater or out of your living room, then where is the damage done? If you can separate yourself from the information that you took in while you were watching such a film, really, what were you doing? You were staring at a bunch of illusions and somehow trying to sort out whether or not it was real. And then when you see the real thing, you have somebody tell you, oh, you know, that's impossible. People saw 100 of these ships in Mexico City. I'm just throwing out an arbitrary number. Sometimes it's more. Millions of people were seeing these for numbers of years, and the Mexican government actually allowed this information to come out. They showed these images to the public, and they shared the information. Why is it that they can't do that here in this country? Is it because the people in the United States, in a way, because they are armed, they're in a position? In some small way, they're still in a position to hold on to their country. They're in a position to fight back about being enslaved. Some presidents, Eisenhower was one who is alleged to have met with beings from another planet at Holloman Air Force Base back in 1954. Possibly Harry Truman as well. Certainly Truman was aware of Roswell and other cases. They let us know about certain cases, and they spin the information. Roswell was the one where they said it was weather balloons and crash dummies, and they tell people that they're hallucinating. It was an optical illusion. The sun did something really weird that made people see spaceships all over the place. I mean, come on. It's like you're so used to listening to the lies that they come out with another lie. Well, all we have to do is lie, because that's all we've been doing all along, is lying. We just have to come out with a lie and keep repeating the lie until it becomes the truth. It doesn't change the situation that there was a sound when the tree fell in the forest, even though there was no one to see it. Now, when you do see a craft, and you know you saw the craft, it doesn't matter what they say. It really doesn't. So why do we pay attention to what they say? Why do we look to them for answers when they're hiding this? You heard Bob Lazar say it. They're after their own interests. They could care less about ours. So why do we give away our power? Why do we allow them to carry on that game? The same game in the banking industry, the same in the pharmaceutical industry, the same in the petroleum industry, isn't it? I published a paper over a year ago about a planned pandemic in 2006 that would occur sometime between 2006 and 2011. We didn't have the pandemic, but they sure announced it, didn't they? They lied to us about that. They're lying to us about what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. It's all about money. We keep telling you, it's all about money and power. And the people in the government are not the ones pulling the strings. Now, I'm going to read a case to you here. This is one of these cases that our friend Kenny had done some interviews with the abductees. Basically, the story is going to describe three women that are celebrating a birthday. One of the three had a birthday, and I'm going to read this story to you. And they encountered a craft at night. This case occurred in 1976, and it's known as the Stanford, Kentucky case. Here's the summary of the case. Those who wish to study the phenomena of alien abduction need to look no further than a three-year period in the 1970s. No fewer than four cases occurred. The 1973 Pascagoula, Mississippi abduction, the 1975 Travis Walton abduction, the Allegash Waterway abduction in 1976, and the abduction of three women from Kentucky in 1976. On January 6th, three old friends, Mona Stafford, Louise Smith, and Elaine Thomas, celebrated Mona's birthday at a restaurant in Lancaster. Driving home in Louise's Chevrolet on Highway 78, the three women saw a bright red object in the sky. As the women watched the object, it began to move closer to their Chevy. Smith had lost control of the car. The little Chevy was going 85 miles per hour, much faster than she had ever driven before. Frightened, she cried out, "I can't hold the car on the road." Stafford, sitting in the front passenger seat, grabbed the wheel to help, thinking that something was wrong with the steering wheel. She was unlucky in doing that, however. The car continued to speed down the highway at 85 miles per hour. The object, now more clearly seen, was a large metallic disc-shaped UFO with a dome atop. A ring of red lights surrounded its midsection. All three women would later describe a yellow blinking light on the object's underside. UFO paced the car, positioned over the driver's side for a time, and then moved down the highway. As it left, a beam of blue-white light immersed the car's interior. Suddenly, the little Chevy was being backed up into a pasture just off the highway, through an entryway with two stone walls on either side. They then were back on the road, and everything was as it was before. An hour and 20 minutes had elapsed, unbeknownst to the women at the time. Needless to say, the three women were frightened to death. They also were suffering from burns on areas of exposed skin. As they finally arrived home, they could not decide what to do next. They called the police station and retired for the evening. The next day, they called the Navy recruiting office. That probably was a mistake there. The Navy released some details of the case to the Lexington television station. After the station broadcast a synopsis of the encounter on the air, the story broke to the major news media. When word of what had occurred to the three women reached MUFON, investigator Jerry Black requested an interview with them. Now, I talked with Jerry Black many years ago, and suddenly he became very silent about this case. The three women at first were against the interview, gun-shy because of the press releases and television news of the event. They wanted it to just go away, not perpetuate it. But Black finally convinced them of his compassion for their recent encounter and his experience in dealing with similar cases. He also offered the presence of a woman, Peggy Schnell, to be present at the interview. Finally, the three agreed to the interview. They began with some details of the sighting of the UFO and its appearance. It was obvious to Black that the three women were suffering ill effects from their encounter. It was very painful for them to relive the events of that frightful night on the road. Though suffering, the women hoped that revealing their details might elevate some of their anxieties. Mrs. Thomas said, "We live in fear of what we don't know." I just said that a little while ago. "I'm worried about Lou and Mona. I think they're ready for a breakdown." Eventually, several other investigators and researchers would join the search for what really happened to the three women. Regressive hypnosis was a viable option. The regressive hypnosis sessions revealed what the investigators feared. The three women had been abducted. They were taken aboard the unknown craft and subjected to medical experimentation. These procedures included very personal, sometimes crude, tests. The women thought they were torturous. Though the women were not sexually violated, they were placed in embarrassing, humiliating positions. There would also be corroborating evidence of the encounter. There were UFO sightings in Casey and Lincoln counties, and also an amazing report from a farmer who owned the property where the car was backed into. This report is a rare verified sighting of an actual abduction as it occurred. He stated that not far from his home, he saw a low-flying object shoot down a beam to the ground near an automobile. There can be no doubt that Mona Stafford, Louise Smith, and Elaine Thomas saw a UFO and were taken aboard this craft for medical procedures against their will. Now, we don't know who did this. They didn't provide names. Although the original reports from my recollection of what I had read, there was much more of a description of the UFO riding alongside the car, keeping pace with the car for many miles, and then taking off at a high rate of speed, stopping and suddenly appearing right in front of the automobile. And so it would have been frightening for women, especially if they had no idea what they were seeing. This just hit them literally, I don't want to say out of the blue, let's say out of the black. That's one such case. Now, there's another case that I had uncovered. This one is actually kind of humorous. There was a family of men, and this was also in Kentucky, who were sitting down to dinner. They were living out in the woods in a cabin. And if you've seen any movies with the early settlers having built their cabin, and then they're basically they're like one room houses in a way. Well, this cabin had a fireplace and the living room and the dining room all in the same area, and you had a clear view of the front door and a window beside the door. As was habit, and probably because of the danger of bears or some other wild animals that might break into the house, they had a habit of just setting their rifle or shotgun up against the chair right there at the table. Something happened, you grab it, and you're protected. So they're eating dinner, and one of the brothers looks up out the window, and he sees an alien being. Now, this being more or less fit the description that we usually hear of a gray, and it's squatting on the windowsill outside the cabin, looking in, peering in through the glass. And it didn't take this guy a split second to pick up his shotgun and fire a shot. And when he did so, the alien did a backflip off of the windowsill. Now, when they went out there, they found evidence that they had been visited. There was definitely footprints and that, but they didn't see him. I don't know that they ever came back. That was the gist of that story, but it was kind of funny. Imagine something doing a backflip off of your windowsill upon you protecting yourself. Now, there are many, many other cases. Betty and Barney Hill was one of them. There were parts of that case that almost sound like disinformation, but then there were some other things out of that case where there was a star map that someone else had basically written. They had been put through regression therapy to deal with the issue, but they had a lot of problems with the rest of their lives after that event. And whenever the government gets involved, it becomes ugly, depending on how much publicity the story gets. I'm going to take another break here for a moment, and I'm going to let you hear something now along the lines of who might have been behind this, because there's a lot of evidence that this is going on. We've been talking about it for a number of weeks, and we bring the topic up occasionally because whether you have seen it or not, there is evidence, there is proof that this planet is being visited. I've talked about that, and it's being visited by both those of good as well as those of evil. Those that are here to help us and others who are here just to control us any way they can.
Imagine, just for a moment, that the world is ruled by a small group who control everything of importance. Governments, big business, and the media. It sounds somewhat unlikely, but now imagine that this all-powerful group comes from another planet, and our rulers are in league with them. Now, that sounds really, really unlikely. And yet plenty of apparently sane people are convinced that it's true.
They own you. They own your emotions, and you basically belong to them.
I think they would kill people. And that's on the record, too.
If you can control someone's sense of reality, then the human collective mind is putty in your hands.
So, has someone been handing out space cakes? Or is this the biggest alien conspiracy of all? July the 16th, 1945. The day the atom bomb exploded. Everyone agrees this was an historic day. But some people believe it was also the day an alien conspiracy to take over our planet began. You see, apparently, this was an event which didn't just get noticed here on Earth. The shockwaves were felt across our galaxy and beyond.
Ever since the UFO phenomenon sort of exploded into public consciousness in the mid-late 1940s, people have wondered, you know, why now? Why now? And of course, the first answer people came upon was that, well, now we have the atomic bomb.
We set off the first atomic bomb. There was such energy released that probably created ripples throughout our solar system, perhaps throughout the galaxy. And other advanced races out there kind of did a double take and went, oh my God, the kids have found the matches.
It's true that it wasn't long after the nuclear blasts in the late 1940s that the first witness reports of UFOs began.
I think it was from outer space, but friendly.
According to the theory, these UFOs were alien craft who had arrived as an advanced guard. They were soon making contact with our rulers and negotiating terms. And if the theory is to be believed, an international conspiracy then began to hide any evidence of this contact. It's a cover-up which is still in full swing, or so some believe. Meet Peter Gersten, an all-American criminal lawyer. When he's not suing people and doing all the other things lawyers do, he's taking on the US government. And that's because ever since he was a boy, Gersten's been fascinated by UFOs. Some people would just go out and buy a toy ray gun, but not Gersten. Instead, he has spent much of his career trying to prove that the American government has been hiding its extensive knowledge of aliens and alien contact.
I was the first and only attorney ever to bring any lawsuits against the U.S. government for UFO-related documents that actually made it into court.
His dogged persistence and knowledge of the American Freedom of Information laws eventually led to the release of hundreds of previously unseen documents.
I must have brought about 10 lawsuits. Even when they release documents, they've always withheld something within those documents. This affidavit is a perfect example. Half the affidavit is blacked out. If UFOs do not pose a threat, if UFOs do not represent an advanced technology, then why is this all deleted?
Why indeed? He says these documents reveal the American government's obsession with the UFO phenomenon, which began during the 1940s and 50s. They reveal the existence of government committees which were initially set up to investigate UFOs. But all along, the existence of these organizations was denied, until finally they were all closed down, one by one. Despite the fact that governments kept telling the public there was no such thing as aliens, the aliens themselves didn't seem to be getting the message. Because according to Gersten, they just kept flying their spaceships through our skies. One case which has been cited by many as proof of a vast conspiracy conveniently happened in Gersten's backyard in Phoenix, Arizona.
Unidentified flying objects over the valley. A triangular-shaped object.
What was in the sky last night?
The Phoenix lights lasted anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours, and there's never been a major investigation determining what that was.
What is it?
I don't know.
About 10:30 at night, there were about 7 lights that had a distinct formation that just stayed over Phoenix in a triangular pattern and then left. And it's amazing to me that something can appear so brazenly over a major metropolitan area and not be fully investigated.
The story gripped the local media, but the official response was some kind of military flares.
They had a number of leftover flares on the aircraft, and each aircraft had to get rid of them because the rules prohibit the aircraft from landing with flares on board.
Gersten returned to the courtroom, but even he couldn't prize an explanation out of the authorities.
The Freedom of Information Act is totally impotent. All they have to do is a reasonable search, and they say they did a reasonable search, we couldn't find anything, and the court goes along with that.
So, is Gersten onto something, or does he just need to get out more? To really get to the bottom of what the government might be hiding, we need an insider. One who's seen some alien evidence with their own eyes.
If you're involved in something like this, who do you talk to? You can't tell your family. You can't tell your closest friend.
The rules prohibit the plane from landing with the flares. No problem with the plane taking off with the flares. And these are 2-hour flares that follow a particular flight pattern. They move in synchronicity with each other, in lockstep. How ridiculous those explanations are. Does it matter? First of all, we need to know if there's flares that can hang out there for 2 hours, okay? We can probably use those to find all the missing abducted children. Now, when you think about the fact, does it matter if they're alien craft or they're our craft? We know the craft exists. Why do we still play these childish mind games? Oh, it's only something that occurs in the movies. No, it's the other way around. They show it to you in the movies to convince you subconsciously and consciously that it's all fiction. I spoke about a 1996 final airport, or I should say Air Force report, that said there was nothing about UFOs that the Air Force didn't understand. That was to debunk the fact that they exist. It's ridiculous. We hear these pathetic excuses that they give us, and we're supposed to just buy that, just accept it as fact. Why is this important? Because all the insanity, all the chaos, folks, that's going on the earth right now, and in the air, the chemtrail spraying, and all this insanity in the Gulf of Mexico, and the intention to vaccinate the whole population and chip the whole population. Where does that fit into life? Have any of you signed up for that? Have you signed up when you came into this life? Do you have any recollection in your being of saying, boy, I can't wait till they come up with the microchip, because that's why I came here, to get that and to have it grow cancer around it and fibers, or I came here to get more gallons, or I came here to get cancer just because it's a new thing. Want to see what it's going to feel like to die of a dreaded disease? This is just pure evil. Just a concerted effort to destroy life the way God created it. That's all it is. And if you think about these things, you know, I've made quite a name for myself, I guess, both good and bad, because I got a call from space on this show on, what was it, May 29th, a year ago, May 29th, 2009, and I put a video of some pictures that were sent to me of another planet in this galaxy. What is so outrageous about that? But then everybody had to debunk these pictures by attacking me, accusing me of having stolen these pictures. Where does one go look for pictures to steal? And I connected the emails that were being sent to several talk show hosts and webmasters, and me and myself as well, alleging that I lifted these off of some iStock website. Some Russian photographer had taken these pictures, saying that the picture of the volcano on the planet Balqui was really Mount Fuji in Japan. All anyone had to do was take a picture of Mount Fuji and put it next to this photo that I published. It's still on my website, by the way, directlightproductions.com. Click on photos. Click on photos, and then you will see pictures of a very beautiful, clean planet, pristine planet, no pollution. Tell me where anyone can take a picture on this planet without getting some air pollution or chemtrails in the sky. The pictures we see of Mars are airbrushed. That planet is not red, and it's not orange or burnt orange. It's got the same type of topography that we have here on Earth. There's a problem with the atmosphere because of wars that occurred there. There's a history there, but you know, if you do a little bit of research and you think and really, you know, they're producing other photos of Mars now that have blue water, blue skies, ice, trees, shrubs, animals, plants, beings. There is a big project going on up there. There has been for years. Why is that so? Why does that have to be secret? Well, they have to keep the lies going so they can keep stealing the money. That's basically it. And there's this planet is being visited. I got a call on the show, and a lot of people feel that call is very credible, and I assure you it was. I didn't make the call. I didn't even know the call was going to come in. Then I had people calling up other radio shows accusing me of telling people that I called the spaceship. I made the call to the spaceship. let's not give AT&T that much credit, or any of the other phone companies. They're not that good. The clearest phone call I've ever heard is on the documentary that I produced out of it on my documentaries page. And I thought it would be interesting with the conversation going on. I included some NASA footage in there showing how these are ice crystals. Isn't that what they say chemtrails are too? I got a film of a Dutch weatherman that I played a couple of weeks ago on this show. It was in Dutch, but he ended, the last two words he said were ice crystals. And he's giving this explanation of how ice crystals form at 10,000 feet in the middle of summer. And you got your air conditioning on in the house and fans blowing because you can't stand the heat. And they're telling you that just slightly above your head, there's ice crystals floating in the sky. And we just happen to have ice crystals floating in space, forming a perfect circle, and then taking off at thousands of miles per hour to evade the laser weapons that were being shot at them. It's on a bunch of the NASA footage. There's a guy, Jeff Challenger, the late Jeff Challenger, who was a quadriplegic, kept his machines running, his tape machines. He'd have four tape recorders going at the same time, filming everything going on the NASA channel. This was back when some people could get the constant feed 24 hours a day. He produced an incredible film of a major storm off the east coast of Florida, and there were craft coming in and out of this storm, lightning and thunder and likely a lot of rain. This was a humongous system. And as one watched this film, you got the impression that it was the crafts that were creating the weather phenomenon. I watched that three or four times to study that. And the interesting thing is it was shot from space, probably from the International Space Station, or maybe from a shuttle. But nevertheless, we saw this. It's not us inventing this. This was broadcast from NASA. Jeff had probably one of the best collections of shuttle footage and phenomenon. I remember a case back in, I'm going to say it's around 1999 or early 2000. And I think it was Space Shuttle 101. They were flying over China. And they had remarked, and if you look down below, you're going to see the Great Wall of China. And right when they said that, I saw a triangular craft doing somersaults, flying far below them. But you'd have to ask yourself, well, who owns the triangular craft? Our government's got triangular crafts. It was kind of interesting to see that. Then the camera on the shuttle, realizing that they were broadcasting this picture, swung over to the side and they changed the story. Then they cut to something else in the control room because they didn't want us to see this. Why not? Why should it be a secret to the people of the world that this planet has hundreds, even thousands of ships coming to certain geographical areas around the world? A number of them happen to be in Indonesia. Other ones are landing in Switzerland. I've talked about this on past shows. I'm not making this up. It's going on. People are seeing this too. But the information is being suppressed. Why? What's wrong with asking the question why? Why is it being suppressed? You see, these corrupt beings that run this planet are not only afraid of the truth getting out, they're afraid of what will happen to them when everyone learns unequivocally that this is the case, that these things are really going on. Those who have been so secret about what they've done for the past 13,000 years are having all the secrets found out. And it's tough for them because they've invested a lot of our money, our blood, our sweat, our tears in creating all this. I ask myself if Bill Clinton, when he was president, ever met an alien. Probably the closest he got was Monica Lewinsky, a Mossad agent that could compromise him and compromise his country. They use the same methods over and over and over again. And why would you want him to know about visitations from other planets anyway? The best he could offer them is a line of cocaine and some kind of shady business deal. So these people put on all these shows to divert the attention from what's going on, but it doesn't change the reality of what's happening. There's overwhelming evidence that this stuff is real. Overwhelming evidence. It doesn't really matter what I say. It doesn't change the fact that it's going on. And many of you listening know that I'm telling you the truth in that regard. And you will be seeing more and more of these craft. You will be seeing the good guys as well, the white hats, if you want to call them that. And there are many, many things trying to get kick-started to bring this world into World War III. And I have a lot of people ask the question, why aren't these people from the other planets helping us? They are. Why aren't you paying attention to how they're helping us? You know, the media has been pumping and beating the war drums for the military, industrial, congressional, petroleum, pharmaceutical complex. For a number of years, we know exactly what they're trying to do, and, you know, it hasn't started. Why? Probably because they've been warned. You heard it in this clip that I just played for you. This thing that there's only intelligent life here on this planet. I've often said, you want to find, this is to NASA and JPL and everybody in that military industrial space complex. You want to find intelligent life in the universe, begin looking here. Quit flushing our money down the toilet. Quit invading countries so you can sell illegal drugs to finance going to other planets. On some upcoming shows, I hope to go into some of the more exotic technologies that exist. And we'll, to our best of our ability, bring you information and certainly some way of verifying these things for yourself. Do you need to experience another Gulf of Mexico incident to know that this planet is being poisoned intentionally? Ask yourself the question, what kind of being would do that to its own kind? The answer is, they are not. We are not their kind. They are not our kind. And we have an obligation and a responsibility to be aware of what's really going on. That's all I'm going to cover on that topic tonight. It's a lot for you to digest, and it is late. I want to thank you for tuning in. Thank you for considering these things, and certainly, if you have some thoughts on this or there's some particular case you'd like to hear about on an upcoming show, we might even be able to tackle it tomorrow. My guest tomorrow, Drew Malone Raines III, is very interested in these same topics, and we may talk about this a little bit. In the meantime, I want to thank you for tuning in and all the folks listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. Also on the sound tonight, Seth Hendrick. I want to thank Donna Doug Newsom at bbsradio.com for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you tomorrow night. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.